down in just a few seconds here. Don't make me break it down for nothing. I wanna see you all on your arms, baddest behavior. I say, lend me some sugar. I am your neighbor. Shake, 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 like a Polaroid. Shake, 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 like a Polaroid picture. Now we shake it, oh no, we shake it, shake, 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 like a Polaroid picture. Now we shake it, I say, shake it, shake, shake, shake it, shake it, oh no. Shake it up and shake it up and hey, yeah, hey, yeah, hey, yeah, hey, yeah, oh, no, hey, yeah.
We started drinking about 10 o'clock this morning. I took a nap. Like a 2.5 hour power nap. Some people just call that a night's sleep. And I woke up and I was still drunk and I came over here and I was kind of like, oh God, I didn't know I guess I should just keep drinking. So I just kind of shot the moon on that one. And now we're here.
Ooh la la!
Shut up, bitch. And I mean that with all due respect, I love, I really do, like, from the bottom of my heart, I love you, I love you so much. But you heard how loud they got when I said that? Like, I knew I was going to get away with that. They were like, tell that bitch to shut the fuck up. And I was like, I will be you, my friend. You guys have been, like, really fun tonight.
I don't know, Eddie. Maybe you're right. This game is just for bangers.
Our next roaster of the evening is a comedy fixture, also somebody that I saw on the scene when I first arrived on the scene. And if I had known then that he was going to be dying of cancer, I would have tried harder not to get to know him. Please welcome to the stage, Corey Mace, everybody.
Keep it going for everybody who's sitting. And Doug and Steve, thank Christ I've got cancer, so I don't have to watch your fucking Facebook post every day. Christ. I went to the doctor, they said my tumors have gotten smaller. They asked if I was on chemo. I said, no, I've been listening to Steve Mack's comedy album. Apparently cancer can't stand it either. You guys were wondering why are we doing this at a Donald Trump rally? You know, Steve could get into the Ku Klux Klan if it was a fucking phone interview. Do you have a job? Yes. Have you ever dated a black girl? Absolutely not! Doug dated a black girl. Do you guys know that? Of course he did, because he cried about it for a month on fucking Facebook.
Cooler.
But the thing is, even if it is just for bangers, everybody's doing it.
Make some noise for Tom Dustin, everybody.
Hey, keep it going for comedy's second most likable Cosby.
Yeah, at least when Bill does it, he fucks the right hole. You're doing it to our ears. Yeah.
It's a thrill to be here. I came in for this because I love Doug Morgan. I honestly do. I think that man is amazing. It's This is the dais tonight. I don't know if you heard the names of the people. It's Doug Morgan, Corey Mintz, Adrian Cosby, Jessica Grau, John Morris, it's a regular who's who of who the fuck is that. These people are all nobodies. And congratulations on putting me on your resume. Hey, I performed with Tom Dustin. Yeah. Corey Mintz, I know him. Corey Mintz is here for now. After hearing Corey's comedy, God gave him cancer. I know that's not true, because if being a shitty comic gave you cancer, this place would be serving chemo mojitos. Doug Morgan it's probably been said already, he runs a thrift store in downtown Dayton. If you haven't been there, try to imagine a really, really bad neighborhood inside a store. The place sells trash and smells like bad decisions. Doug employs a lot of mentally challenged people at his work. That's true, right, Doug? I think it's just to make Jay Snyder feel comfortable when he visits. I know Doug's dad is very disappointed in him. Doug's dad has been amazingly supportive of Doug's comedy efforts. He's seen him perform a number of times. Doug's mom, sadly, passed away before she ever got to see Doug do comedy, or as I like to call it, taking the easy way out. Honestly, though, Doug is one of the most irreverent, animated, amazingly funny characters I've ever met in my life. I have laughed harder with Doug than I have any time. The thing is, there's a qualification for that. It's off stage. Off stage. Doug is like the Superman of comedy, but his kryptonite is a microphone.
Everybody's doing it. There's a lot of guys doing it.
Now this is a video Steve made for, it's a trailer for his comedy album, which was straight out of the suburbs. You ripped that off too. This is the trailer. I was going to set it up with the audio and video. They were going to hook me up and then we were going to do it sound cue like with all AV and stuff, but I was like, he's not fucking worth that. He's not worth my effort. So I'll do it into the microphone. This is the opening of the video. This is the trailer for his Hey Buy My Comedy CD.
At first when I was considering doing comedy.
Wait, let's stop right there. Did everyone hear what he said there? At first when I was considering doing comedy. Well, that begs the question, is that something you're still considering? Wait, the next line gets more outrageously fucking annoying.
At first, when I was considering doing comedy, there were several people that told me, you're not funny enough. There were people that told me that I don't have the ability.
Okay, let's stop right there. Did everyone hear what he said there? When I first started considering doing stand-up comedy, there were people that told me I wasn't funny enough, and I didn't have the ability. Those are your true friends. Those are the people that told you the truth.
A lot of guys doing it. And only one guy can be the best.
All right, guys, our next, our
Our next roaster coming to the stage is a good friend of Doug and Steve, and he's been here a long time too as a fixture of the Dayton community. He's actually been voted the funniest person in Dayton, the funniest person in Cincinnati, and the funniest person in Columbus. And that's pretty much where he capped out right there. That was the top of the chain. The next roaster is Jay Snyder. Say hi to Jay real quick. Everybody say hi, Jay, real quick. He may need you for a fucking alibi later. I'm not saying Jay is a criminal, but he is the reason you need to show your ID to buy Sudafed. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Jay Snyder to the stage.
Thank you for that warm welcome. What is it, just me or does Adrian have the biggest lips you've ever seen on an albino? Jesus Christ, I didn't know Tom was going to turn this into a fucking intervention for Steve to get out of comedy. God damn it. But I am glad for it. Tom told me earlier, after watching Steve's comedy, he wished he had Corey's cancer. Fuck you guys, this is a roast, alright? Adrian has the peripheral vision of Jar Jar Binks. His little apprentice bitch, Joe Young's here. Where you at, Joe? Get up here under the table where you belong. Jessica Growl. Perfect last name, since it's also your mating call. Your last name is what dogs do when they see Steve Mack. Growl. Growl. It's like someone knew what you were going to look like. I'm assuming if there are stains in Jessica's underwear, I'm assuming they're whole turds.
Oh, God, Jesus Christ.
Oh. I hope this is funny to you guys.
I'm really sorry. There's nothing I can do. Nine ball fell.
You a hustler, Amos?
Come on, Eddie. Look.
You a hustler?
Hey, you don't want to pay me? Keep it. Forget it. I don't want no bad feelings. When a guy loses, I lost, I paid.
You a hustler, Amos?
What? Want to quit?
Did you like that, guys? That was some samples from the roast of Steve Mack and Doug Morgan. And that was, I would have liked to have aired more, but we're going to probably air a full version of it or a highly edited version of it. I'd like to say that everybody was as funny as we'd like them to have been, but some people really just didn't pull their weight. And other people pulled more weight than they needed to. And to be perfectly honest, it was a blast, and I'm just still busting balls. Thank you for everybody that participated. It's certainly not easy to subject yourself to that type of ridicule, but that's what being a comedian is all about. In fact, I would say that if you're not able to subject yourself to that type of ridicule, then you are not a comedian. In any case, it was a lot of fun. Raised a little bit of money for future back child support payments for the two of those guys, and I just really aired the highlights of Corey, Tom Dustin, and Jay Snyder, who you guys know from Storytime with Jay Snyder. And I interlaced that with some clips from the movie The Color of Money, which I think I'll end up calling this episode The Color of Funny, which I hope you guys appreciate the pun as much as I do. But I just felt that the two scenes that I'm referencing for this podcast are for you to interpret on your own. If you haven't seen the movie Color of Money, it is the first date movie I ever went to when I was in fifth grade with Michelle Banks. And if anybody knows, if anybody's listening, I'm friends with her on Facebook. I hope I'm not putting her on blast, but she lives off the grid, so I don't think she's listening to podcasts these days. In any case, I had the hugest crush on her in fifth grade until, I think, sixth grade. Fourth, fifth, and sixth, maybe something like that. And we went and saw this movie, which was way above our heads in fifth grade. But I still remember thinking, man, I really wish I could play pool. And eventually I learned how to play pool. But because I have an ocular disorder known as a lazy eye, that's not what it's known as, it's got a medical term, I was never able to get the depth perception down for pool. But this is a great scene study, and I loved it. I literally started to make this podcast and I thought, you know, I got to spice this up a little bit. What would I do if I was going to increase the production value of my podcast? And I feel like that's what I just did. So without further ado, let's jump right in. Well, should we? Yes, let's do it. Let's go right into the shout outs, guys. It's a beautiful day. I did my walk, did 3 miles, took me about 50 minutes. It was about 3.25 miles. And for those that don't know, I had emergency back surgery about a month ago. I haven't worked out since then, and just really got the ability to walk this much distance without total pain. My knee hurts a little bit, but I feel energized in a way that you'll probably be able to tell the second half of this podcast. I am not as energized. I go through some moments of energy, but it was also earlier in the day, and I was like laying in bed while I did it. So. The whole idea is run and gun, no editing. If you have to edit, then that means I start all over from scratch. So instead of giving you guys a rewashed version, I'm going to go ahead and let the other one stand. If you've got a long road trip, you've got a workout, this might be a double duty episode where you can possibly get 2 workouts out of this one episode. I don't know yet. We'll see. But we're going to try to squeeze all these shout outs into one verse or one lap of the song that we play for that, which is Love for Everybody Everywhere. So without any more hesitation, stalling, or preponderance of the truth, let's do some shout outs. First and foremost, Butterfly Lady 86, thank you. I had a great walk. Basario, I was strutting. I was strutting my stuffin' and my muffin. I don't know if that's flattering or not. I'm no angel too. I had an excellent walk, thank you. Laura Cups, I did walk that way. I don't know if it was your way, but it was a way that was towards the north, south. I tried to go every direction, is what I'm saying. Sweet Caroline, 115. Yes, I would walk 500 miles. Glow, 19, thank you. I hope you have an excellent week too. And you know what, guys? We're gonna roll this in to all the people that like the status. And that is going to the top. CG Crony 93, thank you. Derek 9964, thank you. Lisa D'Angelo 11, thank you for liking the status. Flippy W, thank you for checking in. Brown Eyed Girl 13, thank you for checking in. Gray Knight 120, I see you. What's going on in your head there, bro? Head's on fire, bro. Becky and Charlie, thank you. I'm always scared about people who share a screen name or a social media account. I don't share anything with anybody, but maybe that's what love looks like. Forever Sunshine 09, thank you very much. Long time no chat. Monica A2013, I'm gonna say 2013. Thank you for checking in. Rob Per 13, thank you for checking in. Birdie, holla, tweet, tweet. Cal Bell Lynn, thank you for checking in. Gabby Dog 1993 USEA, thank you. Jesse Dene 1990, I like the fact that you split your before and after pic in the profile pic. I'm looking at this on my phone, so I can't really see it that well, but I think that's awesome that you did that. Cali Doll Face, thank you for checking in. Cute Dog, I hope that is been spayed or neutered. Thank you. Jay's Mom, 23. Shrinking Carrie, thank you for checking in. Lizard Beth, I like that screen name. Nice black dress, looking very sexy. JDC021, John, what's up, buddy? 71 Supergirl. And John, I am going to get to that Cody, but I've just barely been home. It's like my second day back off of the road, so I am going to get to that, and I thank you for your information. I have been looking it over. iHeartCookies2, thank you for checking in. Cooks Hop Save, thank you. That's the air conditioning kicking in. Let's try to wrap this up. Fit Fat Fab After 40, thank you for checking in. TMAC24, yes, I'm counting my steps. I'm counting my steps. Emmy Toby, thank you for checking in. Shannon's, I don't know, but it's S-H-A-N-A-H-Z, and thank you for checking in. Princess Pone Dia, thank you. PJR3, long time no chat, thank you for checking in. Following you on Instagram, Karen K, 1124, Rose the Warrior, K-King 76, Golden K 13, Brens 1972, Magic SD, and JKYBM1. Thank you very much for checking in with me. It's Tuesday. You guys get this on Tuesday. Everybody else gets this on Wednesday, unless they follow the podcast, in which case they would know that it was uploaded on Tuesday. But thank you for checking in. BitFab40s, ZYXST, Jessica Molly, Laura Sim, 1, Miss Pettis, XDL, or is that KickDL? And Sweet Caroline 115, again, thank you for checking in. Libby89, Jen M. Pantoga. I always say that 10 times fast. I can't. Jervis 001, Laura Cups again, Terry Jackson 61, BM Hibbs 76, I'm No Angel 2, Super Hockey Mom. We miss you, Super Hockey Mom, but I do appreciate you having your pretty face as your profile pic. Bayshore 98, Renee's Journey to Be Fit, Mandy for my four babies. I don't know if I would have got that out. Angie Rain RCS, we're going to do a promo for your music on the next episode. CC Shamak, Aldis Olaf, I think we're friends on Snapchat, and Butterfly Lady and Citrin236, thank you guys so much for all of your participation. Thank you for listening. I hope you tuned in. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I hope that this is workout length for you. That's the new podcast slogan. It's workout length. We're going to have like new t-shirts on the next run that say totally unrelated. It's workout length. That's what she said. Or that's what he said. Or maybe we leave out that part because it's so hacky. But either way, that's the new slogan. Enjoy your workouts. Enjoy your day. Enjoy your week. Do what you love. Love what you do. Don't dream it. Be it. Hashtag Rocky Horror Picture Show. Love you guys. Hello. Welcome back. It's totally unrelated. I'm your host, Adrian Cosby. Thanks for tuning in. It's a pleasure to be here today. I just found out that it's my 5-year comedy anniversary. And it's a very convoluted sort of anniversary because I started doing comedy on April 19th, 5 years ago. However, that wasn't my first time trying to do comedy. My first time actually trying to do comedy was about a year and a half earlier in a bar in Springfield. And I think that that's probably more accurate, because if we're talking about it in like real substantial terms, in concrete terms, as far as like when you lose your virginity, or the first time you smoke crack, or something like that, something very hard and concrete. And I think also comedy is the first time you stand on stage and hold a microphone. So I don't know why it is that I separate those two dates. I'd say almost my entire 30s, I knew I wanted to try comedy. But the first couple times I tried it, like the year and a half before I actually started doing comedy, when I went to my first open mic, I went on stage. I hadn't really prepared anything. I kind of knew what I wanted to talk about, but I hadn't really written it out. I didn't have a punchline. It was more of like an act. It's more like a sketch that I tried to act out.
And then the second time I performed was about 2 weeks after that. And it was 2 days before I got married. And I brought my bachelor party to the open mic. And we were the only people there other than a few other comedians that were performing. Jesse Nutt was there, who I still know to this day, but I didn't know at the time. And what I found out at that point after that show was that I wasn't going to be a comedian. After that second open mic, I told myself, this isn't for me, this isn't what I thought it was going to be, so forget it. The first one went pretty well, and I thought, you know, Saturday Night Live should be calling any second. But the second time was the definition of bombing. But it's like, you know, it was like bombing in obscurity. At this point, like, I know better than to even show up to do that show. But if I did show up to do that show, I would have still done the show. So, long story short, the reason I don't count those first two times is because after the second time, I decided this isn't what I was going to do. And I went down a completely different path for the next year and a half. And I never really felt like comedy was completely off the table, but stand-up was. And it took an evolution to get stand-up back on the table. And so when it got back on the table, I was actually doing it. So it's kind of like you think you're doing something, but you're not really doing it. Maybe a born-again virgin type of a situation. Either way, I do know this. If you're performing and nobody's there to see you or support you and you're not telling anybody about it, it's happening, but it's not real. The first time that I performed in a comedy club with jokes that I had prepared because I knew something about the art of writing a joke, and when I say something, I mean very little. I knew maybe half of 1%, but it was so much more than what I knew before. And I was hanging out with real comedians. I mean, they were real open micers, but we're real comedians, and that's all it takes is to be in a family or at least hanging out with people who know what's going on or have the same goals as you in comedy. It would be like trying to be an actor but not knowing any actors. It wouldn't work out well for you, at least not starting out. And once I met my family, once I met my tribe, it was through improv, and then after several months of improv, hard edit. After several months of improv, I, you know, was coaxed back into the comedy world, much like Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz. I had people surrounding me that were kind of pushing me towards the ultimate goal. So big shout out to Karen, Jaffe, David Brinkman, Nathan Hall, Laura Feld. You guys were my supporting cast. And I'm sure in some way I was your supporting cast in your journey, because I think that we could all play Dorothy. And, you know, I don't know who the wizard is in this case. I would like to think that back then the wizard was Jack Wilson and... Gosh, I can't even remember Jack Wilson's cohort because I don't want to say her name and have her be equated to the evil witch of the West, because she wasn't. So we're not even going to say that Jack was the wizard. It was probably more like Rob was the wizard, Rob Haney. These are people that ran the open mic at Wiley's, and that's where everybody kind of starts, where I'm from in Dayton, Ohio. You're more than likely going to start at Wiley's. You could start at the Funny Bone, but the opportunities to start at the Funny Bone are just fewer. They're not non-existent. They're just not as prevalent as Wiley's. And if anybody were to ask me, where should I start? And you lived anywhere in Ohio, if you live anywhere in Ohio, and you're like, well, where should I have my first time going on stage be? I would say still to this day, hands down, it would be Wiley's on a Sunday night. It's just one of the best places you could go to have that experience. You'd be in a real comedy club with a real audience. It's a friendly environment. The culture there is very welcoming, so it's hard to bomb in the room. And even if you did bomb, you'd still get a lot of love. So Why is that better than anywhere else? I haven't been to every comedy club in Ohio, but I have been to a lot, and I've been to open mics at a lot of clubs. And what I can say about Sunday at Wiley's, as opposed to maybe any open mic run at the Funny Bone, is that the Funny Bone requires a certain amount of attendance for the show to really feel good. And even then, the aesthetic there just requires a slightly better comedian. It's just a slightly higher bar. It's not insurmountable. I've always done relatively well at both clubs. Let's put it this way. If the act I was doing at the time didn't do well at Wiley's, it wasn't going to do well at the Funny Bone. But I do know some people who've done very well at Wiley's on Sunday, and then they come to the Funny Bone on a Wednesday, and they say, well, what the hell happened? What happened? Nothing happened. You were just under more scrutiny. On a Wednesday night, you're not getting that weekend love. People may or may not have paid to get in, and even if they didn't pay to get in, the food and drink prices are just a little bit higher, just enough so that you want to be entertained. You want to be laughing hard enough to forget about the price of a $6 drink. I don't even think that's expensive, but they probably have. I know they have drinks cheaper than that. In any case, it's not about one club being better than another. It's about one club being different than the other one. And Wiley's on Sunday is a magical place for comedians to start and feel empowered to continue. And that's what happened for me when I went. And I also had all my friends come, and I had a lot of support from the people that jumped me in. I had a great set. That set is available online if you have a link. If you send me a message requesting a direct link to that set, I will send it to you. But I'm not going to make it public. And it's decent. You know, I only ever performed that set one time. I performed jokes from that set individually at times, but that complete set and some of those jokes have never been told ever again. And I don't know why. I think maybe on my 10-year anniversary, I might perform verbatim that set. It was well thought out, but not so much different than what I do now. It's painful for me to watch, but it's better than some people first time. If I could go back and watch those first two sets that I did at the bar in Springfield, that would be painful because there was no, you know, I didn't even know what I didn't know. You know, I didn't know I was supposed to be writing it all down and not just improvising it or freestyling it. And maybe I did know that, but I wasn't willing to do anything about that. But on your journey through comedy, or anything artistic like that, as a painter, I imagine, or a musician, you're faced with the same sort of existential dilemmas. At some point on that journey, you're going to be Dorothy, you know, and at some point you're going to be the Lion, the Tin Man, the Scarecrow, and somebody else is going to inhabit the other roles. Other people will. And I think not being in a fixed state of I'm always Dorothy or I'm always the Scarecrow is probably wise. It probably helps you navigate the terrain to know when it's time to not be the lead character. And I guess I say that because I've had this problem. I just woke up this morning and I'm dealing with this Facebook issue where I hate to be on Facebook, but for some reason I can't completely just leave it alone. And it's not even that I hate to be on it or that I can't completely leave it alone. I don't have the Facebook app or anything like that. I don't check Facebook from my computer. I typically, unless I'm communicating with people, I use the Facebook Messenger app, and that's probably the one thing that brings me in more than anything. But I've been, it's just the political season. It's always the worst time of the year to be on social media in general, I feel. And I just found out that Pearl Jam has canceled their North Carolina date because of the transgender law that was passed in North Carolina. And a lot of businesses are pulling out of North Carolina and other states that pass similar laws. And here's my thing. I don't
I'm not mad at North Carolina for passing that law in the same way that I'm not mad at Pearl Jam for not playing there. But if you're mad at Pearl Jam for not playing there, and you are a fan of Pearl Jam, then I have to think that you're not really a fan of Pearl Jam. Because this is exactly, I mean, you had to have seen this coming. You had to know, especially if you live in North Carolina and you're a fan of Pearl Jam. This is not surprising. Pearl Jam is, I would consider them an activist band. At least on a scale of 1 to 10, they're at least a 5, which means clearly they're active in being an activist, whereas some bands are clearly not active in being activists about anything. And some people would probably argue that Pearl Jam is a 2 or an 8 or something like that, but let's be honest, they're somewhere on the spectrum of being activists. And here's what I know about Pearl Jam fans. The true fans have stories that they will tell you for hours about things. They're kind of like secondhand stories, but they're from like liner notes and just different being a fan. You hear these stories about what kind of person Eddie Vedder is and what type of people the bandmates are or whatever, and just these things that they go through. And those I always like. I'm not really a Pearl Jam fan, but I am a fan of their art. I am a fan of them as a band and people and what they stand for. And their rise to success, being, you know, relatively humble. But mostly I'm a fan of Pearl Jam fans. I love hearing these stories that a real Pearl Jam fan has about Pearl Jam. But I woke up this morning to a friend of mine who was upset about Pearl Jam canceling their North Carolina date, and he called them some names, spoiled, self-righteous, I think maybe, entitled, which is funny, because if you're calling Pearl Jam names like that because they canceled their date in protest of people who have less rights than them, you come off sounding like the exact names that you're calling them. But here's the dilemma. Do I comment on this thread, or do I ignore this thread? Do I unfollow this person? Do I unfriend this person? That's the existential dilemma that you find on this road, where I don't want to say that I pick up more Facebook followers than the average person, because I know there's people out there who aren't entertainers who have more Facebook fans than or friends and Twitter followers and all that, Instagram friends and followers, than I do, because I don't put a huge importance on that, but I pretty much accept friend requests from anybody. I don't typically seek out anybody for friend requests, just because I kind of already know everybody that I know. Sometimes I'll meet a comedian and I'll be like, I need to know who this person is, and I'll seek them out. But I'd say most of the time I become friends with somebody because after a show I get friend requests. And that's fine. But it does screw with your algorithm on Facebook, because I get a lot of people that are friends with me on Facebook who I have no idea who they are after a week or two, and there's just all these political memes and shit like that. So there's a lot of unfollowing that happens during political season. But I've also met some really cool people who I know I only met them after a show, and I get to witness them getting married, having their first baby. You know, I may never meet these people again, but I remember the McOscar family who were sitting up front before they got married when I believe I was opening for Rob Schneider in Toledo 4 years ago. So, yeah, you know, that's just one of those things that happens on the journey through life, is that you meet friends and you let go of friends. And so, long story short, I didn't unfriend this person. I just, I decided what I'll do is unfollow for a little while, because I feel like I needed to do something. You know what? I think that's what it is that I felt like I needed to do something. And in lieu of making fun of him or making fun of the post, I could just unfollow, and it felt like I did something. Whereas if I just ignored it, I feel like I was being complicit. He'll never know that I unfollowed him unless he listens to this podcast, in which case by now he probably knows who he is. But, you know, he's a dear friend of mine, so it's not like I want to not know what's going on in his life. It was just one of those things where it was like, you know what, because I don't want to have a long, drawn-out conversation about this on Facebook, and even if I did, I don't think either one of us would change each other's minds. In lieu of that, the most minimal thing I could do is to unfollow temporarily. I mean, I may not ever go back and follow him, but I've done this before where I temporarily unfollow people. And I typically remember the people that I unfollow, because if I'm thinking like, am I unfollowing this person or am I theoretically unfriending them? Because if I'm theoretically unfriending them, then I'll just go ahead and unfriend a person. It's almost like I don't want to do something that has you wonder, well, what happened? Like, if I'm willing to unfollow you, I'm usually willing to unfriend you. So, like, I guess what I'm saying is, I want you to know I unfriended you when I show back up in your suggested friend users. Like, I thought we were friends. That's a bit of a long rant, but I don't think, what I'm saying is, I don't think we should censor each other on Facebook. But I do think it's your own responsibility to make sure that you're using social media in a way that has you feel not bummed out every day. And if you feel bummed out from your social media experience, it's probably time to start adjusting your algorithm. Because, you know, like, you have 2,000 friends, you're probably only going to see 150 posts, or 150 people's posts. I'm not exactly sure what the numbers on that are. If anybody has them, I'd love to know what they are. 5 years today, and that's funny that I was going to record this podcast anyway today, and it turned out to be my anniversary. And the funniest part about that is, I thought it already passed. I thought it was back in March. The other thing was, when I started doing comedy, the first time my 5 year anniversary today, and not my, I guess that's my born again anniversary. We'll call it that. I'm sure some people are so they're such sticklers about facts and dates. What is a real open mic? What isn't a real open mic? What is a real comedy experience? When I first started doing comedy, there was a common theme amongst some people who weren't getting the respect they thought they deserved or getting booked where they thought they should because they didn't have the experience. But they'd say things like, well, I've been funny my whole life. You know, just because I didn't go on stage doesn't mean I haven't always been a comedian. And to a certain extent, I do agree with that. But the thing that you're forgetting is that's pretty much every comedian's reality. At least 90% of them. I'm sure there's 10% of them that were like, I was never the funny person in my family or class. But I decided I wanted to be, and I was. On stage. For me, it's always been with me. I haven't always been the funniest person in the room, but it's funny because from my high school, people are like, I never saw this coming. Some people say that, and other people are like, I totally saw this coming. And so I just think everybody, you know, comedy is subjective enough that it just depends on how people view you. But the biggest difference was that after my first open mic at Wiley's on April 19th was I knew that's what I was doing. I was just looking at the pictures from the after show and everything, and I just realized, like, I knew then that there was no turning back. I knew that there was going to have to be some adjustment in my life and some things that I was going to do differently, but that was it. In fact, I think I knew at that point that improv was a thing of the past for me as well. Not that I didn't like improv, it was just I realized everything that I was doing in my life that I was substituting with comedy. For instance, I was playing soccer on like 5 different teams. That went away because I was only playing soccer on 5 different teams to substitute not doing comedy. I was playing internet poker. That became illegal, and I never sought playing poker in live action games or anywhere else other than like a couple, you know, or one night a week at my Monday night game with my friends, which wasn't nearly the same thing. I went from playing 40 hours a week to playing maybe 4 hours a week. Because it wasn't important, because comedy was, it was just a substitute for comedy. There was a lot of things in my life that I was doing that were just substitutes for comedy. And once comedy came along, all those other things melted away. And it wasn't until that point that I realized it. And it wasn't just because I did it well or I had prepared for it. It was just that, you know, if you were going to become a cook or a baker or a chef and you never cooked for anybody else, you never got a second opinion, you never got the validation of an audience, of taste testers to let you know that what you're doing was okay or at least semi in the right direction. And I think that's what I did, is that I think you could say I made cupcakes that night and they got a decent enough review that I thought, that's good enough. Now I know what I'm going to be for the rest of my life. Which I think I already knew it's what I wanted to do, but wanting to do something and deciding to do something are two totally different spectrums of existence. I know a lot of people that all they want to do is be comedians, and it doesn't necessarily mean that that's what they should do. I know a lot of people that all they wanted to do was be poker players. And of all the poker players I've ever known, I've only ever respected about 1% or 2% of them for being real poker players. I don't think I even include myself in that mix of being a real poker player. I think I was more of an enigma. I don't think any of the people I was playing with could understand what it was I was doing. But they may have a similar experience. I don't know. Poker's very similar to comedy in that no matter what city you go to around the United States, you can find a poker game just like you could find somebody doing an open mic comedy or a comedy show. You're going to have the exact same characters. They're just going to have slightly different names and slightly different color beards, and but they're going to be playing the same game that you play back in your city with the same rules, with the same cards. It's very similar. And maybe that's what made me more adapt to this boost through my first 5 years than some. I don't know. I think being older and having had 40 jobs probably plays a large part of that. 40 jobs. And I don't know if I've ever discussed this on the podcast before, but I've had a lot of jobs, people, and I've only ever been fired, I think, once. And, you know, that comes into dispute. Like, some people would say, we fired you, and I'd say, you realize I'm the one that stopped showing up. Right. But I don't think I ever had a job where I never communicated to them that I was quitting in the same way that I want you to know we're not friends anymore. I wanted them to know it was them, not me, if it was a job situation. And I've had multiple jobs with the same company. So if I was like a delivery driver and a manager at Donato's, that's two different jobs, two totally different job descriptions, one company. However, I've had three paper routes in my adult life, and I count that as one job, and as the same job as the four paper routes I had when I was in my youth. So like seven different paper routes, that's one job. That's the same job no matter where you do it. It would be like saying every comedy gig I've ever done was a different job. You know, I'm not doing that. All comedy gigs are one job. Improv is different than stand-up, but that's about the only two designations I have for performance art. Other jobs I've had where I worked for the same company, I was a laborer, a field engineer, a safety director for one construction company. So I count that as labor, field engineer, safety director. Those are three different jobs, three very different job descriptions. Now, in reality, I was also a carpenter assistant and a carpenter. But those two jobs are very similar, and they're also very similar to being a laborer. So I just kind of count all of those as one thing, because labor versus field engineer is very different. A field engineer doesn't even, like, you could wear a suit on the dirtiest construction site and maintain relative, your the bottom of your pants might get dirty. But a field engineer is a very cushy job. It's about as cushy as being a safety director, except a safety director is just all knowledge-based, being able to look at a situation and say what's wrong with this picture or what's right with this picture. Three different jobs, three different pay scales, three different descriptions, one company. I did all three things for three different jobs. I was also a scaffold erector and a concrete finisher. Not really, but I did finish some concrete, and I don't count those as different jobs. I basically did the three jobs. Everything else could fall under carpenter labor or carpenter helper. What's another place I did multiple jobs for? YMCA. I was a lifeguard. I did after school care. I was a swim instructor, a gymnastics instructor. It was more like tumbling for really young kids, but I was pretty good at that in my 20s. What else did I do for the Y? I think that was it. Swim instructor, lifeguard, after school, and gymnastics. So we'll call, and I have always called, lifeguarding and swim instructor the exact same job, because you couldn't really do one without the other. Sure, you could in the real world, but at this place, if you were a lifeguard, you were probably going to be a swim instructor. Did we have lifeguards that weren't swim instructors? Yes. Did we have swim instructors that weren't lifeguards? You were probably lifeguard certified. Maybe you didn't work as a lifeguard at that YMCA, but you were somehow a lifeguard or qualified to be. So I count those as the same thing, and they were both basically pretty fun. Gymnastics, completely different. It was a class that was, you know, once a week for an hour, and completely different than swim instructions, which took place over like 6 hours every Saturday and Sunday. And lifeguarding in between spots where you weren't, so seemed like the same job. After school care, everybody knows that's completely different. But I've done after school care at about six different places, three of them being YMCAs, and before school care, and I used to drive kids to school. Now, driving kids to school and taking care of kids after school are two totally different things, even if you're doing them for the same company. And I'll tell you why. Because anytime you put kids in a moving vehicle, like a big van or a bus, you're taking on a whole new set of responsibilities. And if you're just taking care of people's kids in a gym, much more manageable if an accident happens. Once you get in that car and morning rush hour traffic, you got to have nerves of steel when you're transporting people's kids. Well, that's just my analysis of how I get to the number, how I've had 40 different jobs. I'll probably have to sit down and prove this one day, but just like when you try to recount how many people you've had sex with, if that number's bigger than four over time, it starts to fade away. Some of the details start to fade away. I couldn't remember my bank account number yesterday morning when I was at the bank. I had all the numbers, but I was putting them in the wrong order. But I was also talking about Tottenham Hotspurs, who are in the League Cup chase right now, with the teller, who was trying to tell me a bunch of names that he remembered from 2007, which I didn't really appreciate him telling me that he is no longer a fan because they replaced their coach. You're a fan of a team regardless of the coaches. You're a fan of a company regardless of, well, maybe not. Maybe not a company. But you're a fan of a team, right? Because it's the team, not the coach or the manager. I mean, what the hell? In any case, I think I made a solid case for him coming back on board and following again. Shame on him. But I did recover, and I did remember my account number. That being said, how old am I getting to be when I'm gonna need the ginkgo now? I gotta get on the ginkgo biloba. What else do we want to talk about? Got show this weekend in Michigan. The Travelers Inn and Pub. After that, last week of April, I'll be at the Liberty Funny Bone with Eliza Schlesinger from Last Comic Standing and multiple TV shows. Very beautiful, Eliza Schlesinger. And then I think the week after that, I'm in Hartford, Connecticut, which will be the first time I've ever been that far east for the comedy, which should be, it should be fun. Flying, which I don't like to fly, but I'm flying a day early, so that takes a lot of the stress off of. I just hate flying for 7 hours and then going to a show the same day. It's just, flying takes more out of you than driving. It's like high stress, landing, dealing with the airport. We'll see. I've heard good things about Hartford. I'm excited to go. What else is new? The weather's changing back. It's very nice outside right now. I'm going to work on walking. I've been putting on a lot of weight since I had my emergency back surgery a month ago. And it's not even that I'm putting on weight. I'm actually losing weight. I'm losing muscle. And that muscle is turning into fat. That fat does not weigh as much as the muscle. So I'm not gaining weight, but I'm gaining flab. And I'm starting to have a lot more range of motion in my right leg. I don't think I could run, and I don't think I'm supposed to run, so I'm not going to, but they said I could walk. So I'm going to put on my comfy shoes, and I'm going to start walking at least 3 miles every day. I'm going to start logging my food again every day and at least maintain my weight, because certainly nothing is going to make the recovery process easy if I start ballooning. And I'll tell you, the thing that made it hit home to me is that I've been having this craving for hot fudge sundaes from McDonald's. And I've just been like, in general, craving McDonald's a lot since the surgery. And I think I was probably losing the most weight of my life, or at least easily maintaining the lowest weight of my adulthood, when I wasn't eating McDonald's at all. And for a lot of you, eating McDonald's is like the devil. And for some of you, you're like, it's not that big a deal. I eat McDonald's all the time. It's a love-hate relationship with me. I don't like to eat McDonald's. I feel relatively guilty every time I do, except for the fact that sausage and egg McMuffins are my favorite thing in the world to put into my mouth. Second favorite thing in the world to put into my mouth. I mean, I don't even want to describe the sausage McMuffin experience, but what I'm saying is I didn't eat McDonald's for a long time because I had a bad experience at a McDonald's, and I thought, you know what, fuck McDonald's. I'm not giving them any more of my money. And then I realized that I wasn't really punishing McDonald's. I was punishing myself. And that's going to be different for other people. I wasn't shopping at Walmart for a long time. I wasn't really punishing Walmart. I was just making life more inconvenient for myself. So now my philosophy with Walmart is, if I can get it somewhere else, get it somewhere else. But if Walmart's right across the street, I'm not going to like get in the car to go. I'm not going to ruin the environment to spite Walmart. And it's not even about spiting Walmart. It's about making sure that I have a good experience wherever I go. And that's really what it was with Walmart, is that I wasn't having a good experience whenever I went in there. And this is what happened with Walmart and McDonald's, was I was already expecting to be disappointed. And my disappointment surpassed my expectation when I went in. And that's a really kind of a scary situation, when you're like, all right, this is going to be pretty painful and bad. But you go in and it's like, and the tellers are rude and the people in line are stinky, and it's like, wow, this is way worse. Now, I don't know if because I was expecting it to be bad, it was worse, or if it was just unexpectedly bad that day. But at the end of the day, it's not that important to me. These aren't the things that I'm making a stand on in my life. And yes, I want Walmart workers to be paid more. Yes, I want Walmart to be a better company. But if I'm not shopping there, then I don't really have any say in that. I'm certainly not contributing to the conversation. And for McDonald's, it's really more about a standard of expectation, because when you travel the country, I can honestly say that the difference between from McDonald's to McDonald's isn't that different, as opposed to Wendy's, Burger King, any other fast food place. Your variation could be wildly different. But McDonald's has a pretty good standard across the country, except for Colorado, where they have some amazingly well-run McDonald's. But at the end of the day, when you're on the road, that's what you're looking for, some level of consistency. At least for me, I like to know that what I'm going to eat tasted like what it tasted like yesterday. Is that always true? No, there is definitely some variation. But I think at the end of the day, it's more of like a way of keeping yourself sane. And I know that McDonald's coffee stays warmer and tastes consistent pretty much all over the country, which is weird because I feel like it's the cups. I feel like the cups have some sort of radioactive isotope inside the styrofoam that has the coffee stay hot. It's like when you put something hot in, it gets like a perpetual fission going on inside the styrofoam that causes the coffee to reheat itself. Does that make sense? I hope not, but that's what I feel like is happening. And so I like McDonald's coffee. It makes me comfortable when I drink it, regardless of how shitty the service is when I go there, regardless of the, you know. And there was one time when I was like, the lady that was working the window at McDonald's had a cold and she was like clearly sick. And I was like, great, now I'm going to be sick. And then like 2 days later, I was. It wasn't that bad, but it was like I could trace it to that. I thought it was going to happen, and it did. And I was just like, this is too much of a risk. As a comedian, I think you become a germaphobe by default, because performing when you're sick is so undesirable. I don't think anybody ever wants to be sick, and I don't think anybody ever wants to go to work sick. But because calling off of comedy is so detrimental to your career, it's easier to avoid becoming sick in the first place. And so I think people, if they had a slight tendency towards germophobia, can really fall deeply into that germophobia. Just like if you had a minor eating disorder or body dysmorphia issues, being a performer can enhance that psychosis. I don't know if psychosis is the right word there, but you could definitely drift off into psychosis through that. I just ordered new refrigerator magnets, totally redesigned, and I'm much happier with these. In fact, I'm using a caricature that somebody drew for me from the Super Dope Comedy Show album recording that I just did last week in Kettering, Ohio, in the garage of a stranger. It was a truly unique experience. It was fun. It was about 10 comics on the show, and I closed it out, and I was genuinely nervous. I don't know if I was nervous or if I was freezing to death, but both, for sure. It was cold, it was outside, I was not prepared for the weather, and in a way, I think that worked for me, because at a certain point, I was like, I could just leave. It wasn't like a paid show. But for some reason, like sticking out to the end and being cold and shivering, I was literally, my leg was shaking like I was doing an Elvis shaky leg dance move while I was standing there, and I was trying to isolate it and keep it inside my pants. I don't know if it was anyone noticed, but I noticed. And I still performed. And it was fun. It was kind of like a younger group of kids. And comics that I know that were doing it, and I didn't, you know, it's funny because they were all doing so well and they were all so different than my style of comedy. Not to say that I didn't find them funny, I'm just saying that like comedy is like ice cream, and that, you know, there's probably 31 different flavors if there were 31 different comics. And they were all younger and more, I would say, alternative in nature. Whereas I would say I'm more mainstream in nature. I certainly have alternative qualities, but the whole package is packaged inside of a club comic. You know, and the definition of a club comic would be mainstream audiences. And then you would have the road comic, which the difference between a road comic and a club comic isn't really that much different. It's just that a road comic might have more trouble in a club because people in a club will have heard the road act before. Whereas a road act works in road rooms well because these aren't people that have a comedy club in their town or don't get to go to comedy clubs often. But a club is slightly more desirable than a road act or a road show, in my opinion. But some guys make their living on the road, some guys make their living in clubs, and some guys make their living at home in the same city. Chicago, New York, and LA, you could theoretically make a living working around your home and never have to hit the road. I love working the road, but I like working the road and clubs. So I'm going on the road this week to do a one-nighter in Michigan, and then the next week I'm going to kind of stay home because it's only 2 hours away. But I'll stay there for the shows for sure, because driving 4 hours a day when you're trying to do comedy is just every day for 4 days wears on you. Yeah, so I don't know what you would call that. If you go on the road to work clubs, are you a road comic or a club comic? I think we still call that a club comic. Maybe I am just getting lost in the minutiae. I'm still riding the high from the Bert Kreischer weekend at Virginia Beach. That was so much fun that now everything gets compared to that. For instance, this last weekend I went to Huntsville, Alabama with my best good friend Jay Snyder. And we had a great time on the way down and on the way back, but the show, as usual, when you have a great time in the car, can sometimes be less than. But what really, the only difference was that I'd had a series of great shows and shows that I really loved, and then this show wasn't that. It's not that the show was bad, but it was underattended. For some reason, there was only 40 people there when normally they have between 200 and 300 people. They said normally a small show would be 200 people. And as we were leaving, a couple people that were also leaving said that they enjoyed the show, they couldn't believe how few people were there. They tried to buy their tickets on Tuesday, but were told to call back on Friday because they weren't sure the show was even happening. Now, if that's the case, that certainly explains the drop in attendance. But I don't ever take that kind of thing to heart as fact. Yes, I did hear them say that, but who knows what happened at the box office that day? For instance, somebody may have been in there that wasn't normally working the box office, was just answering the phone while somebody was in the bathroom. So it could have been they could have been the one people that called that got that information. Could have been something else happening in town. It was an army base, so you'd think it was kind of a captive audience, but the room was so big, it was obvious that there wasn't enough people there. I had a good time, play a clip from it, but it certainly wasn't the best show of the week or the month or the year. It certainly wasn't the worst, but it was worth doing just for the experience. It brings you back down to earth when you get a show like that. The biggest problem was there was nothing I could have done to have that turnout be any different. I wasn't the headliner. Even the headliner who said he wished he had known, he would have done something to try to boost. There's nothing you can do on an army base, even if you're a general. There's nothing you can really do to boost the attendance at a non-required meeting of entertainment at an officers' club in Huntsville, Alabama. I mean, it was up to them. I don't think they dropped the ball. They fed us, they gave us a place to stay, and they bought us a drink. We bought the rest of drinks ourselves, but it was worth doing, but barely. And the money was better than normal, but like the humility was worse than normal. And it's not even like I was humiliated. It's just, ugh. When you're performing in a room that seats 300 people and there's 37, it makes a big difference. It makes a big difference in how the people that are there are going to receive the show, because they're also aware that this isn't a very special event if there's only 37 people there. But that being said, on to bigger and better things. I'm doing the Travelers Inn and Pub in Leroy, Michigan this weekend on Saturday. So I'm pretty sure that's going to be a lot better. And if you're sensing a tone of sarcasm in my voice, well, I don't know where that came from, because that's totally not what's happening. I'm creating the possibility that this show on Saturday in Leroy, Michigan is going to be the best show I've ever done in Michigan. Okay? So we're there. How are you guys doing? Are you working out? Are you enjoying the spring weather? Are you hitting the road? Because I hope you're enjoying these podcasts. I'm making them specifically workout length, which means at least 45 minutes. Now, I like to go a full hour, you know, because I'm the type of person that likes to work out for an hour. And if you've heard me say this before, I'd like my first 20 minutes of the workout has nothing to do with working out. It's like putting my clothes on, changing probably my workout outfit two or three times, filling up a water bottle that I'm not going to take with me, but I might take with me if it's hot enough out there. But even still, it's just so hard to carry, so I'm not taking it. Socks, shoes, suntan lotion, then wiping the suntan lotion off so it doesn't run into my eyes when I start sweating. These types of things. This is the first 20 minutes of the workout. Then you actually go outside and realize, whoa, it's way too hot, or it's way too cold, or it's raining, or it's snowing, and you're not going to do this today. And then you're like, no, I got to do this today. And you're like, okay, well, just wait 5 more minutes. So then 25 minutes goes by, and now you're actually working out. And I only like to work out for about 20 to 30 minutes. So that's why I get to the 45 to 55 minute range for the podcast. As I like to say, it's workout length. And I think I'm going to make that the slogan for the next run of shirts. Totally unrelated. It's workout length. That's what she said. That's what he said. Something like that. I don't know. I'm willing to take suggestions. If you guys have any ideas for t-shirts for me, send them over to me to CosbyComedy@gmail.com or Facebook or Instagram. Direct message me or Snapchat me. Whatever. Whatever. You can find a way to get in touch with me. Please, no snail mail or Friendster. I just closed my Friendster account, so I don't think you're going to be able to get in touch with me there anyway. But one thing that was crazy is how much access some of these people give their fans. I noticed Bert Kreischer was giving people his phone number. But I also noticed that when you're around Bert for more than a few minutes, his phone is always going off. It's always like bleep, 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 bleep. Like text messages from random strangers who probably think he's checking every message. Some of it might be social media notifications or other types of notifications. I mean, he's a busy guy. But he gave his number to at least 5 different people that I knew we weren't going to be hanging out with. But it was like kind of like a, and I don't know if it's his real number, but he kind of did the same thing with me. He gave me his real number. And out of the, I think I texted him 3 times. He never responded to any of them except for one. But he texted me like a couple times. And I don't think he responded after I responded to his text. So I could tell that was the behavior of somebody who's dealing with a lot of messages. And then I started thinking, like, am I too guarded with my phone number? Because I kind of had the old school mentality of, I'll ditch a number quickly. I don't care. Like, I've had the number I've had for maybe 5 years, I think, since I started doing comedy, or maybe soon after I started doing comedy. But before that, I'd had that number for maybe 3 years. So about 2 to 3 years is how long I'm used to having a number. And I will change a number. I have no problem changing my number. But giving out my number is what one of those things that I like. I typically would rather not do. I'd rather communicate with you any other way than through having given you my phone number. And I think it's because I compartmentalize. Like, there's certain people I'll only talk to on Facebook Messenger. There's certain people I'll only talk to on Google Hangouts. There's certain people I only talk to on my phone text messaging. And then certain people I only talk to on Instagram Messenger. Which is weird. Now that I say it like that, I never noticed that. But I totally do that. And it's because it's easier to deal with the messages that way, I feel like. I feel like it's easier to know I'm going to talk with comics on Facebook, and I'm going to talk with my family on my phone, and I'm going to talk with, I don't even know, there's no real rhyme or reason to the people that I talk to Instagram, because I'm not friends with them on Facebook or have their phone number. That would be the main reason I'd Instagram messaging with you. But it's funny because sometimes I'll get a text message from somebody that I was just Instagram messaging with, not having realized that they had my phone number. So weird. In any case, guys, that's a full episode of Totally Unrelated. I'll probably play some clips on this. Stay tuned. Like, follow, comment, share. All of those things make a huge difference in the world of podcasting. And so I guess this will be what I'll close on right here. If you don't notice, I'm trying to go for a Wednesday release date. The new refrigerator magnets that I'm having made are specifically say new episodes every Wednesday. And the reality is it's going to be available on Tuesday. But if you don't follow, you wouldn't know that. Yeah, I post it on social media. I post it everywhere on Wednesday. So like that's when I actually do my push to let people know it's out there. But it actually goes up on the website on Tuesday. So if you follow the podcast, you would know that because you'd get an alert, I think, that there's a new episode up. But if you don't follow, you wouldn't know that. The only place I post that it's available is on MyFitnessPal on Tuesday. So once a new episode goes up, if you're on MyFitnessPal, you will get a notification if you follow my wall. You know, if you look at my wall or you're just on there like I am, which is a daily thing. And I don't know why I do that other than the fact that it was the followers that I had from MyFitnessPal that encouraged me to keep going when I slowed down with my podcast. And they were the ones that were the most vocal about regularity. And I realized this recently when a podcast you're expecting to be released doesn't happen. There's a certain amount of distrust and anger that sets in for me. And so if anybody has ever felt that anger or distrust about this podcast, that's what I'm trying to alleviate. Because certainly having a podcast, being a comic, I would have the most empathy towards these types of situations. And it's still, I know how I feel when Pete and Sebastian don't release a podcast on time. I know how I feel when Bert Kreischer doesn't release a podcast on time. I know how I feel when any of the people that I want to hear a podcast from haven't released a podcast in a long time. I feel, it's not like I'm angry with them. I just feel like I want it. I want it when it said it was going to be there. There's like the proprietary aspect of doing what you said you were going to do. And I feel like that's all we have in podcasting is our schedule. So that's my commitment to you. I hope that you enjoyed this episode. It's the first episode I've ever recorded on my phone as a rant cast, sitting on my bed on my 5-year anniversary to being a reborn comic. It's a special day for me. I hope it's a special day for you, as every day above ground should be special. Go out there and live your lives, guys. I realize how rare it is for somebody to leave their job in a restaurant as a restaurant general manager and tell his bosses that he was going to go become a stand-up comedian and then actually do it. I can't believe that I am actually doing it every day that I do it. Just like I can't believe that anybody even bothers to listen to this podcast. It is a dream come true, but it's also a waking, living, lucid dream that I want for everybody that wants it for themselves. So if you want to be a belly dancer, if you want to be a singer, if you want to go be a stripper, hey, life is too short for you to not experience what it is you want to experience. Go chase it. I love you. Have a great week.
My way, why should